Good day and welcome to the Business Success Network podcast. I'm Stacey Calder, founder of the Business Success Network and magazine, and we help you to grow you and grow your business. We want to get you as visible as possible online, offline, and through events such as networking, awards, and conferences. If you're sitting here and listening to this and thinking this is a great show, we are looking for guests to be part of it. We want to hear your story and we want to share your information with the public. We want you to be as visible as possible. So join us over at the Business Success Network UK on Facebook, join the community, get the support, become a cheerleader for other small businesses, and we'll see you very soon.
Hi everyone, and thank you for joining me, Dom Fenton, at the next Business Success Network podcast for charities. I've got another guest with me today that I'm excited, and we've had a good chat beforehand. I'm excited to find out a little bit more about this guest. Andrew, how are you?
Good, thank you, Dom. Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. Thank you for coming on. So, Andrew, for those who don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself and your business and a little bit about what you do?
No problem, Doc. So I'm Andrew Heward. I'm the managing director of a company called Heward Solutions, or at least that's our trading name. Actually, we're a limited company, Heward Sports, but that's kind of irrelevant. What do we do? Well, that's a really interesting question. You could call us fundraisers, but I try not to. I like to think of us as not-for-profit sector specialist consultants. Our job is to help small to medium, local to regional causes get to where they want to be. We don't want to work to save the children and big international causes. We want to work with the organisations that are linked to their communities and really get their communities, because that's where the big difference is made, in my view. So that's kind of who we are.
Yeah, and to be fair, you are so much more than just that. And obviously, we'll delve in a little bit to that sort of later on. It's really important for us when we do these to really try and understand the person behind it. Okay, so what I want us to look at now is a little bit about who you are, what your background is, how you got to where you are now, because we all have really different journeys to get where we sort of get to. So, Andrew, yeah, talk to us about that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, like most people, I think my journey's pretty convoluted. I think that's pretty standard. I start to say that I'm from the Southwest originally. I'm based in the Midlands today and been here for a very long time now. I finished at my A-levels like everybody else and kind of, you know, thought, what the heck am I going to do? Ended up working in leisure on poolside originally and did a couple of years there and went up to supervisor and all those sorts of things. And then I got introduced to a chap who worked for the youth service. And he, you know, he said to me, actually, I want someone to run an outdoor activities project for us in village youth clubs around South Devon. And I took that on and I got involved and set up this project. And basically we used to go out into village youth clubs doing youth empowerment work, helping kids design their own outdoor education experiences. That's my sporting background originally, at a personal level. So, you know, my job was really to make sure they had fun and didn't kill themselves or each other, basically. But it was about giving them the power. So did my first ever grant in that job. So that kind of started a journey. Then spent a bit of time and I worked for a private college dealing with children with really severe behavioural and, you know, other challenges, learning disabilities and so on. Not a particularly nice institution in hindsight, but I learned a heck of a lot from being there and from working with those audiences. That eventually closed, probably a good thing, again, looking back. And I got a job up in Nuneaton and Bedworth. And I spent 7 years as a development officer there in the leisure service. And I did lots of grant projects there, from the biggest, what's still the biggest one I ever did, a £7.5 million leisure centre build. Absolutely enormous. Right the way back to the other end of the scale, and £500 sponsorship for a moderate learning disabilities football team to get set up. You know, and everything in between. Spent a few years there doing some really cool stuff, really enjoyed it, and eventually got a job over in Stoke with the City Council within what was the Education Department then, but leisure used to sit there. And I joined that team as funding officer and spent years there working with schools, working with community groups, and actually working just for every other bit of the council, because those fundraising skills are kind of quite useful and you tend to get sucked into a million and one things. So I did museums projects, did arts projects, did all sorts of stuff. And all the way along over that period, it was about kind of supporting organisations. You know, it wasn't just for the council, it was the council with its many convoluted partnerships. from resident associations through to schools, through to all sorts. So did that, career moved on, leisure service moved on, and over the years our roles changed. I set up and ran a huge social inclusion project that was recognised by the World Health Organization and British Heart Foundation as best practice. That was a really cool period. Got published off the back of that academic, it was quite fun. You know, I really loved that. And eventually I ended up as general manager in the leisure service after several years, running, you know, five leisure centres, a huge team of staff, massive annual budgets, and all the responsibilities. And I lived through that austerity period in local government, you know, and leisure took a, you know, absolute beating during that period because it's non-statutory. And, you know, I'd spent years building stuff that I was really proud of, and we spent the next few years cutting it. And that was pretty horrible. It's not great for mental health, in all honesty. And I probably spent 4 or 5 years maybe telling the chief exec what he didn't want to hear. That's the truth of it. You know, and there comes to a point where your influence wanes and, you know, you're being asked to do things you're not comfortable with anymore. And that was my cue back in sort of 2017. And I took voluntary redundancy. I just, I couldn't do it anymore. Didn't want to do it anymore. And it was difficult because I had to kind of say to myself, you know, I'm leaving behind 100 odd staff. And, you know, I'd been sitting between them and the organisation for quite a long time. But I just couldn't do what I was doing for them any longer. I wasn't able to get those results any longer. So it was the right thing. So I always say I set up my business not because I was desperate to work for myself, but rather it was kind of the outcome of not wanting to do what I was doing at the time. And I sat back and thought, you know, what are you going to do, Andrew? I had a little bit of money on VR, but it's not a fortune, it doesn't last for long. And I came to the conclusion that actually I'd spent most of my career supporting organisations in one form or another. You know, and along the way, I'd learned about management, I'd learned about fundraising, I'd learned about governance, I'd learned about marketing, etc., etc., etc. And so I wanted to bring those skills. And I knew that there was a real need for particularly smaller organizations, someone to kind of be there and hold their hand and support them. And, you know, there'd been a time when that's what we did in the council. And that's what, you know, local voluntary services organizations have done for years. But austerity had beaten the heck out of all of those resources. And it just wasn't enough to go around anymore. Mm. You know, a lot of them just didn't exist.
Yeah.
So my business was founded on the fact that I knew there was a need, just didn't know there was a business in it. And, you know, 7 years later, we've got a fairly successful business going. We work in a lot of organisations, and that's what we do. We hold organisations' hands to help them get to where they want to be across a whole range of different stuff. So that's kind of my story, how I landed in this very niche, very unusual sort of area of consultancy. But I love it because every organisation is different. Every day is different. It doesn't matter if I'm working with a football team, a steam railway, a sexual health charity, you know, and that's kind of what's fun about it.
It always amazes me the journeys that people go on. And actually so many, not all, but so many people set businesses up when actually sometimes they don't even know there's a business there. But it's almost a need to be able to go, well, I don't want to do that now. And I need to do something. So why don't I start this? And sometimes it is just see where it goes. And, you know, and obviously our conversation before this, we've spoken a lot of times, but not recently. So it's been really insightful to sort of catch up just before this. So in terms of, so when would you say was the first charity or non-profit that you actually did any work with?
That was a kind of a follow-on, I guess, from my time in the council. I'd done a huge amount of work with football, in the football community across North Staffordshire. And probably my first client, I think they were the first client, it's difficult to remember now, was a lovely young people's football charity called Staffordshire Lads and Dads. They're amazing. They run a number of self-managed football sites that I'd helped them get and been responsible for that process back in the council day. And, you know, I knew them. I knew the charity at the heart and all the branches and so on. And I helped them with a number of grants. And that was where I kind of first started off working with them. And that first year, maybe, was all about sport. That's when we were trading as Heanwood Sports Limited. But then in parallel with that, I was getting all these phone calls and people kind of making introductions. And I found that the business world was supportive and positive and helpful rather than competitive and cutthroat, which is what, you know, coming out of the public sector, my perception was it was going to be. And of course it wasn't. I met some amazing people who went so far out of their way to help my business get off the ground. And I just found that I was getting lots of other inquiries, and really the sports bit was the confusing bit for folks. So we adopted the Heanwood Solutions trading name, because actually it really doesn't matter what the client does. They're the expert in what they do. It's not my. I'm not an expert in sexual health. I'm not an expert in steam railway engineering. Yeah. Never going to be. But it really doesn't matter, because my job isn't that. My job is to get the information from the client and help them work through the challenges and apply, you know, broad, high-quality management principles to what they're doing.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what they don't come with. You don't set up a not-for-profit on the whole because you're passionate to manage people or budgets or market. You set up a not-for-profit because you want to make a difference to the world.
Yeah,
you know, and those two things can be in conflict sometimes.
Yeah, and as you say, actually, in some ways, it doesn't matter what the vehicle is to do it. Actually, you're there holding their hand through the other processes. Let them worry about the vehicle. Let them worry about those bits and what they do, and you're there just alongside them to support them.
Yeah, absolutely. The kind of work we do these days, it grows inevitably. Yeah, we start off doing a lot of fundraising. We still do a lot of fundraising, do a lot of research and big writing and so on. And that's kind of become the nuts and bolts of the business. But actually, you know, what's happened over time is we've started to do more practical work. I'm really passionate about getting away from grants and diversifying income streams. And so I get involved in fundraising strategy and planning for that. And that leads us into marketing because, of course, you know, only really grants and commissioning are a one-to-one communication. Everything else needs a marketing funnel. You've got to talk to loads of people. And if you're going to do that, how are you going to do it?
Yeah.
So we get into that sort of work with organizations because it's not their expertise. And then we get into evaluating what they do. Quite interested in the whole idea of monitoring evaluation. And it comes back to grant scheme because all this is interconnected. Because actually, if you're going to make a great grant application, it's two things. It's a bit more than two, but fundamentally it's two things. It's an emotional story that someone cares about. And it's a whole load of hard facts and figures, both your own and other people's, that actually say, this is why you should care. This is why this is a real issue. Yeah. But if you're not evaluating effectively as an organisation, not only are you not getting the management information you need to be effective and to run your organisation well, but you're also not being able to tell your story effectively when it comes back to more funding. So that monitoring evaluation piece has become really central to what we do. And, you know, we get involved in writing evaluation reports. That's the more mundane end. Although I often say to clients, you know, what we tend to get given is a bit when you talk to an accountant, they say they've had a bag of receipts from a builder. That's what a lot of not-for-profits give us when we get involved in evaluation reports, because it's not what they're interested in.
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem. You get a different volunteer filling in the evaluation form every day. That can be problematic.
Yeah.
So we do work those reports, but we also then get involved in building evaluation frameworks. So actually helping build the systems and the processes and looking at which of the evaluated tools are the ones that might work in their world that are simple and easy to use and things like that. And then how they're going to store and manage the data. It sounds quite boring, and I guess it is, but it's fundamental.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, last year we just went one step further and we launched Insight, which is our own digital monitoring evaluation tool that's, you know, absolutely game changing. It makes life, you know, from doing your register at the beginning of the session right the way through to sending out really quite high tech surveys and building surveys that work in your world. It does it all. And so that's, you know, the business we've evolved. And it's really all about supporting and servicing what the sector needs.
Yeah.
Everything we've done has been a response to what we've found from our clients.
Yeah, and I think that's the powerful bit. That's the really powerful bit. So, as obviously part of what we're doing, to you, Andrew, how can businesses and charities or non-profits work together?
Yeah, I mean, there is massive opportunities. Obviously, ultimately, a charity and not-for-profit, they're still an organisation, they're still a business in the simplest of terms, and they're either being successful or they're not. You know, and that doesn't matter what your legal structure is or your social purpose.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. So there's a couple of things. Not-for-profits require a whole range of services. So there's opportunities to sell into that sector. And people don't realise how big the sector is. And it is enormous. Absolutely enormous. It's just disparate and a bit complicated and a bit muddly on occasion. And, you know, people don't present in their not-for-profit hat most of the time. So it has its challenges. So for a business, there's an opportunity to actually do business in the space. But equally, there's ways that the not-for-profits can support businesses and vice versa. I get quite hot under the collar when people talk about sponsorship. You know, that's one that we get involved in helping organisations sort out sponsorship. But there is this real difference between sponsorship and corporate social responsibility, and it's often misunderstood. You know, sponsorship is a commercial deal where both organisations, the sponsor and the business sponsoring them, both those organisations see a commercial benefit to it. There's something of real value. Now, that's different to corporate social responsibility, where a business engages in not-for-profit sector fundamentally out of goodwill. And that might be all they want, is a little bit of goodwill out of it. And if you approach those two things the same way, they don't work. Yeah. And the classic example, the one that frustrates me every week, comes across it so often, you talk to football clubs and they've sold boards around the edge of their football pitch. Non-league team. And they put these boards up. And they're the other side of a football pitch, so you can't read them half the time anyway. They probably get 30 supporters to a game, you know, or something like that. And they're trying to sell them to local businesses a sponsorship for £500 a season. And I'm there thinking, how many of those 30 people that turn to 30 games max a year are going to buy from that business? And are they even going to read the flipping thing? The reality is, it's a donation in every other form. So let's be honest with folks and then approach it the right way. And you'll get better results. So we talk about that sort of thing. So there's always that sort of sponsorship conversation going on. And then there are other things. I mean, we've seen lots of really nice examples of collaborations between commercial and non-commercial organisations. That might be a marketing activity. It could be, something as simple as just donating something, for an event. You know, there's so many ways. And one thing I'm a really big advocate of is for smaller not-for-profits to get involved in the business networking space. And they often see it as a bit of a kind of, it's a lot of time. Every Friday morning, I've got to get up at 6 a.m., attend that meeting. And they probably get it for free or close to free compared to the business being paying, 1,000, 1,500 quid a year for the same benefit. So they're getting a good deal to begin with. But what they then do, the charity comes into the room and they stand there with a handout. And the business look at them like they've got three heads because actually they don't understand that. Yeah. So what you've got to do as a charity going into that space, and it works really well, but you've got to go in with a proposition all the time. You've got to have something for someone to engage with. Oh, we've got our ball coming up. We're trying to fill up some tables. And actually, the number of times I've been into networking, charities come in, and then all the business has got together, say, tell you what, let's all club together, folks. We'll have a table. That'd be a nice night out. And all of a sudden, they've made 1,000 quid.
Yeah.
And they also made money on the night because these people are there, they're spending, and so on. So there's so many ways that it can work, but you've got to understand the game you play.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, the issue fundamentally to my business is helping our not-for-profit clients understand those games, those processes, because we are a foot in both camps. And that's a really powerful position.
Hi, my name is Chris. I am the Chief Monkey from Scruffy Monkey. We are a web design business based in Bolton. We offer web design and support packages with a particular niche on charities. We have over 200 clients throughout the UK, 40 plus of which are charities. We've been working with them for 9 plus years now, and we really get what you guys are about. So we'd love to help you out. So please do get in touch. We also offer free web design audits where we'll just do a quick video recording of your website, what you can change, what you can adapt to help you tell your stories further. Feel free to connect with us on any social media channels at ScruffyMonkeyDM, or check out our website, of course, at www.scruffymonkey.co.uk.
And I think it is, and as I say, I've seen lots of organisations come in, and after a couple of weeks, they're just going, we haven't done anything. Well, yeah, but there's not everyone can just go, right, there's some money or there's this. And actually, you haven't told us anything. You haven't said you've got events coming. You know, we had an event last night. Well, talk to us about it. You know.
Well, if we go back to marketing for a second, I said to you earlier that nearly every kind of fundraising other than commissioning grants is about a marketing funnel. So and in this day and age, that's really going to bring us back to social media. It's email marketing, it's social media, it's digital in one way or another, most of the time. Now, let's think about that business networking group. Now, I've been to my business networking meeting this morning. There's 35 members in my group and one charity. Yeah. So that charity comes in with an event. Now, I can buy a ticket to that event, I can sponsor it, I can give them a prize, whatever. And we do those sorts of things from time to time. But equally, one of the things I can do is probably more powerful. If you look at my LinkedIn account, I've got 4,000 followers. I've got another 5,000 connections. I've got loads on Facebook. So actually, one of the most useful things I can do for them is just share the hell out of their information.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can massively increase their reach, and there's 35 other people in that room trying to do the same thing if they've done it well. So actually, the ask isn't just a financial one. It's about helping each other. And the same goes for the charity. How can the charity help the business? Well, sometimes the best thing they can do is just say, did you know these people exist? Because they're in networks that businesses aren't in. So it's just about going into it with an open mind and a bit of collaboration.
Do you think that's where, and potentially both from a business point and from a non-profit charity set, do you think that sometimes people go in with their eyes shut, not expecting certain things?
I think they either go in with their eyes shut or they go with a fixed idea of what they're expecting, which is actually worse. Eyes shut, you can kind of open them. When they come in, they think this is what it's going to be like, and that's what I want from them, that's what I'm prepared to do. And they don't listen to the room, and they don't get to know the people. I mean, it's all fundraising, business networking, business, I would argue, is all about networking. It's about relationships. You know, you do business with people. I mean, I go back, before I went to university, very long time ago now, I spent a few years working for Canon, selling photocopiers and fax machines in South Devon. Yeah, and it was brutal because we had the most expensive product on the market, best product, but the most expensive. And I was working SMEs. So, you know, they wanted to spend next to nothing back in those days. But the one thing I learned from that, and it was a guy who was selling colour photocopies at the time taught me this, and he was selling products at 100 grand a piece. Yeah, massive high ticket items. And he was best in the country at it. And he taught me that people do business with people.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's two things I learned in that job. The first thing was that. And the second thing is we're always selling something. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do, if you're a charity, a business, doesn't matter. We're always selling. You might be selling an idea or a concept or a service or a product. Yeah. You might be selling yourself. Have confidence in me. But all human interaction at some level has sales in it. And we think of sales as some kind of vomit inducing, you know, oh, embarrassed to be involved in sales. And you know, we really do get our heads absolutely upside down about it. And charities are just as bad, of course. So understanding how this fits together and taking the embarrassment away really matters.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. In terms of you and your business, what's the future look like at the moment? Where, because obviously just having our chat, it's changed fundamentally, massively, even since last time we spoke.
I mean,
what's your sort of next sort of 3-4 years?
Yeah.
Sort of what are you looking at doing?
I mean, there's things that have changed. There's things that haven't changed. We set up as a purpose-led business. We're still a purpose-led business, and we always will be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not in this to drive a Ferrari. I say this quite often to people. I don't want to drive a Ferrari out of my business. I want to pay my mortgage and do some good. And that's the driver. Yeah. And that influences everything we do. We don't want to be a sausage machine. We want to be an organization that understands our clients and knows our clients.
Yeah.
So we build relationships at heart. Yeah. And as a result of that, I never want to have a team of 50 people. So not the vision. I want a team of 6 or 7 who are really good at what they do and know their clients really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the goal. We're heading that way. There's, you know, 4 of us in the business. And, you know, that I'm very happy with the way that's evolving. Where are we going? Well, obviously, every business changes. We started off just doing, you know, grants and grant research, and we still do a lot of that. But increasingly, we're providing more and more integrated services for not-for-profits to help their success. You know, the big thing that's happening to us, and it starts from April this year, I'm really excited for this. We're launching what we're going to call our Success Club. I'm not sure about the name, but it's better to come up with. I don't really matter, actually. And that's basically a subscription model. What we'll do for a very low cost subscription, £30 a month plus VAT, so pennies, is you'll get 15% off all other products. So that's a pretty good benefit in itself. Yeah. But actually, more importantly, you get access to our Insight Monitoring Valuation app. You get access to our Impact knowledge based tool. So it's kind of consultancy without the consultant. You know, you've got a question. We've got loads of this data that I've built up over years that is so valuable. But how do you present it in an easy-to-use way? So we've been creating something for that. And then the other thing that I'm really excited about, and I really enjoy doing, actually, we've been doing quite a bit of mentoring and support for, you know, leaders and fundraisers in not-for-profits. because it can be very isolated in both of those, actually.
Yeah.
And it's useful to have someone else to talk to, someone who's got no vested interest in it in lots of ways. So what we're doing within the Success Club, we're also giving 4 45-minute one-to-one sessions a year, so 1 a quarter, basically, just to catch up and say, how's it going? You know, yeah. And actually, what are your problems? And do you know where to look for the answers? And can we, you know, I mean, it's a bit of, can we help them? Of course there is. There's always a little bit of sales in it, I guess. But that's not the driver. The driver is actually to be there to give them the support they need. And you know, there's somebody they can ask, because, you know, there's a really interesting thing. You just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And we all have these blind spots. And I guess a big part of our business model is helping people, you know, identify where those blind spots are, and then hopefully find solutions to them wherever possible.
Yeah, so a lot of that sounds so exciting. And I think as well, it's, as you say, there's so much knowledge there. And the thing is, a lot of the time, if we're not sure of something, we'll search it. So actually, we're searching it anyway all the time on whichever platform we're going to be using. So actually, you're creating your own model. So actually, rather than search it there, search it with you.
Yeah.
You know,
it's important, because there's a few things to say there. I mean, the internet in itself is inherently risky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's because data comes from a gazillion different sources. Some of them are AAA quality, and some of them are triple F quality. Yeah. You know, and the trouble is, if you don't know what you're looking at, how do you know?
Yeah.
And some of a mixture, but I can think of a couple of organizations who do knowledge-based information that's pretty good, but the problem is they don't curate it very well, so it's either very difficult to access, or there's a blend of great stuff mixed in with a whole load of dross. So I guess what we are after, it comes back to that relationship thing. I want to be the trusted, supported advisor for the organizations who work with us. And it comes back to trust, doesn't it? So what we want to do is to give them a whole load of things that they can go to us and say, you know what, we believe they know what they're talking about, so we're going to go back to that. That's a source, it's a trusted source.
Yeah.
And that's fundamental to our business model and actually the culture of the organization. You know, we're very value driven. You know, we want to help people as much as we can. I always say, you know, when we have an initial meeting with somebody, you know, they may or may not do business with us, and that's fine. I don't care too much. Yeah? What I want to do is I want that person who's come in and had an hour and a half with me normally to leave that meeting thinking they've had an hour and a half of their life that's added value.
Yeah.
Now, if they've done that, they often come back and say, can we work with you? Great. You know, I'm happy to have that conversation. But equally, hopefully they've got away and thought, you know what, I now know what to do about something that's been bugging me.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah, I think that's really important. Obviously, the non-profit, the charity sector, where do you see their challenges over the next couple of years? And you're heavily within this sector, so where do you see sort of the next 2-3 years, the biggest challenges for them?
It's been really interesting. I mean, I think it's worth going back briefly, actually, particularly when we talk about funding, which funding is always the big challenge in the non-profit space. It's either funding or it's the kind of political winds. And those two things are intimately connected anyway. And you're seeing a number of things, I think, at the moment. You know, during COVID, it was really difficult for everybody, every organisation. A lot of not-for-profits actually did pretty well out of grants in that period, ironically. Mm. Yeah, there was a lot of specialist support that appeared and so on. But equally, what you saw was the big charities, the, you know, your hospices and the like, that make millions of pounds a year out of charity shops, do street collections, and they obviously lost all those income streams, but their cost didn't go down.
Yeah.
So they pivoted into the grant space. So pressure on grants got a lot higher. So we saw this kind of reduction in success rates, you know, plummeting over COVID. What we saw after COVID, we saw that begin to recover. Didn't get back to where it started, but it definitely got easier again for a while. And what we've seen in the last sort of 18 months, 2 years, I guess it is cost of living filtering into that. And you're getting exactly the same kind of pressures appearing. More organizations are struggling. So as a result, pressure goes under the grass, makes it worse. I've read a couple of really interesting reports on some of the internet forums I follow in the last few days of funders going back to applicants saying, you know, we've received 18,000 responses, applications for 60 grand's worth of grants.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mental. You know, it's not good for anybody. But that's, I think, indicative of the pressure. Now, I don't think that's necessarily typical, but I think it is indicative of what's going on, the pattern. Yeah. So there's definitely more and more pressure on income streams, particularly into the grant space, but other places as well. Obviously, the cost of living donations go down as well, etc. So I think one of the results that is the big charities, they will pivot, they will change their resource models, you know, they've got the overall capital, probably the reserves as well, to weather those storms. Yeah, the smaller not-for-profits that we work with, you know, your local, you know, football club or a local mental health charity, you know, perhaps one employee, that sort of thing. Well, actually, it's either going to come out of some poor soul's back pocket and they'll make it happen because they care, yeah, or they'll weather it as far as they dare and they'll get more and more stress. There's a massive mental health challenge appearing in the sector, and, you know, we're beginning to see the edges of that, yeah. But in the same way, we're seeing lots and lots of organisations coming to us, and it always upsets me a little bit when this happens. They come to us at the 11th hour. They come to us to say, you know, we've got 3 months of reserves left. And actually, at that point, I mean, I can't always promise that we'll dig them out of a hole anyway. But at that point, we're looking for a Hail Mary solution. And they don't come along very often, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But every now and then you can do it. It's lovely to pull one off. And I will always try. But it's depressing. So I'm definitely seeing massively increased pressure in the sector. I'm definitely seeing funding getting tighter. I think off the back of that, hopefully other people like me are saying the same things, so they're getting good advice across the piece. But actually, I'm preaching a gospel of diversification at the moment. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And that's difficult because actually, you know, a little bit of resource in a small not-for-profit, perhaps one fundraiser if they're lucky, they're not going to have the skills in every area. They're not going to have the background, the relationships being built and so on. So that presents challenges. So there's a huge kind of change journey that's got to go on if people are going to survive. Because actually, if we do what we were doing 5 years ago, you won't be here in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
No, but that's going to be the reality. And along the way, we've got to be really cautious that we're actually caring for our people. And that this is another big problem in the sector, is that not-for-profits are intimately, nearly always beneficiary focused. And you know, why would you not be? That's why you're there. The problem is it can miss actually the focus that needs to be on the staff and the support systems and so on. And if you don't look after that, you've got nothing. There's no one to help your beneficiaries. So there's a number of challenges. Now, it all boils down to the fact that the pressure is just ramping up and up and up. And I think what we'll see off the back of that in terms of solutions, I think we'll see diversification of fundraising going on. I hope we'll see more and more of that. I think we'll see more collaboration going on, so charities working together better. I think that's important. And perhaps cross-sector collaboration. Charities working with businesses better. I think that really matters. And I think the other thing we might see, and this makes me a little bit sad maybe, is I think we might also begin to see some charity mergers and some charity failures, unfortunately.
Yeah.
A merger is better than a failure, but sometimes a merger can be, you know, harmful in itself, you know, because actually, you know, if you're merging two areas, then, you know, by merging resources, the simple truth is you're not going to be quite as well connected with the area that you were to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of care and planning needs to be done. And, you know, this is going to be worked through with good strategy and not knee-jerk reactions to immediate problems. So I guess what I'm saying to people, if I was, you know, crystal ball glazing, is don't expect your future to look rosy. So plan for what it might look like and, you know, have a contingency. Think about what those groups are. And if you plan them now when you've got a little bit of time and, you know, you're not hitting panic buttons, you've got a chance of doing a good job of it.
Yeah.
And you can mitigate the challenges.
Yeah, I think that's it. And, you know, the big word for me in all of that, collaboration, just thinks massive. And I say this to everyone I ever talk to, in whichever sector, collaboration is so much better than competition. And actually, absolutely, just look outside the box a little bit more and you'll always find something you can collaborate with. You know, I think that's vital. But also planning as well. I think that's really, the amount of people that I've spoken to go, exactly what you've said. Actually, I've only got four or five months money left. Well, okay, well, maybe go back to 6 months before that. Go 6 months before that and go, right, I've got a year's left. Now what am I going to be looking like in a year's time?
Exactly. And you know what? Things might improve, it might all work, and that's great. And then what you've done is wait a little bit of time on that planning. But you've always got that contingency plan there. You can always evolve it and change it in different circumstances. But you've got a starting point. If you haven't got it and everything goes pear-shaped, you know, you really are in trouble. Yeah. And that's when the stress goes up. That's when the staff team are unsettled. You start losing the good people. You know, all of that is damaging.
Yeah.
So you've got to plan for it. And I think that's just the art of good leadership.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Completely agree on that one. Right, final question from me. The amount that's come out, even just for me, has been massive. So thank you for that. If you could give a top tip, you've been given loads. So it might be one that you've already used because we've just been flowing with the tips. What would be your top tip at this present time?
Okay, I'll go back to Grant. That's where I started the conversation.
Yeah.
And for years and years, I tutored sporting leagues across the West Midlands, delivering workshops for them. And one of them was a Grant workshop. Yeah. And this was the one big message in that Grant. And forgive me if I'm going to put this, but I think it'll amuse you and people can benefit. What you see, and I cover this when I do fundraising training, what you see when organisations write their own grant applications, they tend to write grant applications that sound like this to the funder. And please forgive me if I put this.
Yeah.
I'm having it up on purpose. Look at us. Aren't we lovely people? And look at this wonderful work we do. And you know what? We make such a big difference. But the problem is, you know, we haven't really got very much money. So if you could just see a way to helping us just a little bit, we could do so much more. Please help. And that's what the funder reads in your grant application. Yeah, because you are emotionally and intimately connected to your cause when you write that. Yeah. Now, all of that is true. All of that is right. All of that is fair. And it has a place in your grant application. However, and this is the tip. Yeah. The problem is it misses the point. Yeah. In the UK, we've got circa 8,800 organisations giving out grants. And they're giving out a huge amount of money across them. I mean, it's massively competitive, but there is an awful lot of money being donated. But, and this is comes back to what we talked about, sales and various other things already, the same principle. What you've got to understand when you write your grant application is you've got to understand what that funder was set up to achieve. What their aims, objectives, and critically, the outcomes they are seeking to achieve. And you don't write a grant application that says, look at us, your money will help us do this. You write a grant application that says, we've got this project and this need, and if you support us in meeting that need, we'll deliver your outcomes in this way. And that is the best tip I can give anyone.
Love that. Yeah, I love that. And I just think, I've seen some of these applications, you know, I've helped write some of these applications. Completely agree. It is all about that person writing it and not about what the other outcomes are. And
I mean, it comes back to write for your audience. And that's a marketing tip.
Yeah.
But it's the same principle, actually. And you know, when I have new staff join my business, the thing I say to them is, actually, because you very few people come into fundraising with a lot of fundraising experience. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And what I say to them is, really, at the core of what we do, is our business is about comprehension. Yeah, that basic skill you taught at primary school. Yeah, what we have to do, just like a good exam paper, yeah, we have to read the stuff from the funders and we read between the lines and we try really hard to get an incredibly detailed understanding of what's being asked by the funding opportunity. Yeah, because once we've got that, we can match the funding opportunity to the right client, to the right project, and we can also tell their story in the right way, pick the right case studies, explain it in the right way, use the right statistics, etc. So it's that comprehension of what the funder wants to achieve that really matters the most. Because if you don't achieve that, it's a pretty much a direct route to the round receptacle in the corner of the office.
No, that's brilliant. Andrew, where can people, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Okay, so we have a fairly comprehensive website, which is hewardsolutions.co.uk, dead easy to find. The other place, and I always suggest to people to engage with me here, either myself, so that's Andrew Heward on LinkedIn, that's great, or Heward Solutions on LinkedIn, and we're posting, you know, really high quality, useful information, probably two or three times a week. Every Friday, we will post just a randomly selected grant opportunity that has come across my desk, and I've seen it and thought, that one's interesting. Yeah, and I'm not promising it, they are fairly random, but I quite like that. Last week there was one about stained glass, for example.
Okay.
Yep. You know, but that's kind of what makes it fun. But equally, this is very mainstream stuff as well. So, you know, that's a great place. And obviously, if anybody wants to get in touch with me direct, then you can always email me at andrew@hewardsolutions.co.uk. I'll spell Heward because people always get that wrong. It's HEAWARD. So that's hewardsolutions.co.uk. or .com, actually, both work.
Either one. They always end up finding each other anyway, don't they? So
exactly. But yeah. I love meeting people. I love chatting to people. And my goal is always first and foremost to be helpful.
Amazing. And you have been on here, Andrew. So thank you for your time.
No problem.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you are interested, then have a look at the Business Success Network on Facebook. If you can find, go into the group's charities. That's where I'm based. I'm Don Fenton, the Activity Connector. This is the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll see you again soon. Thank you.
So, you've been listening to the Business Success Network podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please do go and check out all the other episodes that we offer. We've got a great range of guests that have gone before us and that are coming up. And if you want to get involved in the Business Success Network, you can find us at www.businesssuccessnetwork.co.uk. There's loads of ways you can get involved, whether that's from contributing to our business magazine or whether that's getting involved in the podcast. We are here to showcase your expertise and help you to grow you and grow your business.